This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 11th of September 2015. Hello and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 11th of September 2015. Which this week have been edited by Linda Vincent and Margaret Boyden. Your readers today are Michael Wyard.
Hello.
Maria Head.
Hello.
And Brian Woodruff.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Keith Vincent. Now, the main headlines this week: leaders' plea for city to open doors, bar end plans to go before public, and new green belt proposed. So may we have the story behind the first headline, please, Michael?
Leaders plea for city to open doors. Winchester City Council's leader, Stephen Godfrey, is encouraging local people to open their homes to help the Syrian refugees. He spoke as thousands flee their home nation gripped by civil war. Councillor Godfrey said, "The council's housing team is looking at how refugees will be housed, including keeping some properties that are scheduled for sale or launching a new scheme to encourage homeowners with spare rooms to take in lodgers or tenants." He said, "Winchester has a proud track record of helping people in need. The Zimbabwe refugee crisis is one example. We are waiting to hear what government is asking of local authorities, but we are already gearing up to work with colleagues at Hampshire County Council, registered housing providers and private landlords." Councillor Lucille Thompson, leader of the Liberal Democrat group, told Cabinet yesterday, "These are really desperate people and they need our help now. Winchester is an extraordinarily generous city and district, and there are lots of organisations within that district, churches, charities and individuals, who are really desperate to do something, but they don't know where to direct their efforts. I know a number of individuals who are keen to have rooms to let out on their house, make rooms available in their house for refugees when they arrive." Housing Chief Councillor Caroline Horrell reassured residents that the crisis will not jeopardise their places on waiting lists. On the streets of Winchester, there was a mixed response to Councillor Godfrey's stance. James Toll, 28, of Sparkford Road, said, "I'm open to the idea. We think it's a good scheme and hope people can take it up." Edward Goodman, who's 30, a high street market trader, said, "To be honest, I wouldn't be able to house anyone because I have a young daughter." And Leif Ralph, 27, a restaurant manager from Full Flood, said, "I wouldn't open my house to them. I do not know if living here is the best option."
Bar end plans to go before public. Civic chiefs were yesterday set to launch a public consultation on whether to build a new leisure centre at Bar End. Residents will have their say on whether to refurbish Winchester's crumbling River Park Centre or build a state-of-the-art facility on the outskirts of the city. Debate has begun over what could be built on River Park if the multi-million pound Bar End scheme goes ahead. Winchester City Council leader Stephen Godfrey has proposed a new community cultural facility. Cabinet was due to approve the consultation as the Chronicle went to press yesterday. The public will be able to view and comment on further designs and studies at Bar End by Roberts Limbrick Architects ahead of a final decision at Christmas. A centre at Bar End, costing up to £29 million, would meet the district's needs for 30 years or more, while a 4 to 6 million revamp would extend River Park's life by a decade. The new facility would be built on land including a play area, artificial turf, county council land and a small part of the King George V playing field. Civic chiefs have ruled out building on North Walls or the garrison ground owned by Tesco. The Chronicle reported this summer how potential backers, including Winchester University and Hampshire County Council, have thrown their weight behind Bar End, convincing councillors that a plan previously dismissed as unaffordable could go ahead. The council may also generate cash by redeveloping its former depot off Bar End Road. Councillor Godfrey said it could be used for retail housing or a combination of the two. Council officers have conceded that refurbishing River Park would only delay a decision on where to replace it, while Councillor Godfrey has suggested the current site has development potential. He said, "I would hope that we would be able to put in some sort of community leisure or community cultural facility to replace the leisure centre. It's an excellent site for that. This is something attractive that people want, and which would be an asset to Winchester and would add to the life of Winchester." In a report to yesterday's Cabinet, Council Corporate Director Steve Tilbury said, "Although the Bar End location would be less accessible on foot and by public transport for some existing users, this is likely to be offset by ease of access from the local road network and will make it more accessible for others. Winchester University is understood to have accepted in principle a £6 million contribution towards Bar End, but Mr Tilbury's report said no outside funding has been guaranteed and settling the issue may take some time." There is a computer-generated design with this article, which has been proposed by Studio 4 Architects.
New green belt proposed. Winchester Civic Chief wants to cap the size of the city and surrounding villages by creating a new green belt. Swathes of rural land could be made off-limits to developers through devolved powers for Hampshire and the Isle of Wight. Councillor Stephen Godfrey, Conservative leader of Winchester City Council, said devolution could in future prevent schemes like the 2,000-home Barton Farm estate being imposed on Winchester to meet nationally set housing targets. 15 Hampshire councils, including Winchester, signed a devolution prospectus sent to the government on Friday. Winchester District's 9 green gaps are less regulated than green belts. They include those between Littleton and Harestock, Otterbourne and Shawford, and Bishops Waltham and Swanmore. Asked whether these would form a new green belt, Councillor Godfrey said, "I am not aware of anywhere that we would want to give up, and I think we're looking at that, as well as examining a broader range of constraints of development so that our settlements don't grow too much more than they are now." For many years, at least 10 years, residents and their representatives have been trying to protect what is beautiful about Winchester. We are in large parts a rural district, and we want to make sure that we are keeping the protections for those rural parts. Hampshire and Isle of Wight council leaders are looking to form a combined authority similar to Greater Manchester, taking powers and multi-million pound budgets from government. They've pledged to accelerate and expand house building if Welsh Hall commits to helping with infrastructure and land release. A regional programme to build 76,000 homes by 2026 is currently behind schedule. The prospectus said, "The designation of new green belt or similar measures to protect the settlement pattern, when undertaken alongside the planning and delivery of new homes, would provide reassurance and protection and build support for the additional of development we're proposing, as it's been seen to be concentrated in the most appropriate places." Asked whether such controls could have prevented the Barton Farm scheme going ahead, Councillor Godfrey said, "Possibly, Barton Farm was, I don't want to say foisted upon us, it was put on us by the demands of the South East Plan to meet the housing targets for the whole of the South East. If we've had a good control, we may have felt that it wasn't in our best interest. Councillor Godfrey said housing targets could be met by developing other cities, other sites, I beg your pardon.
Thank you. That concludes the headlines. Now we continue with the death announcements. Christian comment, letters to the editor, historical items, chronicle comment, first person and Belgarum, and then we'll do the announcements and what's on. So we start with the death announcements this week. Ballard, Ernest Alfred Ballard, who died peacefully in hospital, aged 87. Brewer, Mary Gwendolyn Brewer, who died peacefully on the 5th of September, aged 78. Butcher, Morris Ernest George Butcher, who died aged 78. Earwaker, Nancy Earwaker, who died on the 6th of September after a short illness, aged 83. Fletcher, Dennis Fletcher, former chief cashier of Winchester City Council, who died aged 86. Howlett, Anne Howlett, who died peacefully on the 4th of September, aged 90. Jones, Betty Maud Jones, died peacefully at Tandridge Heights Care Home, aged 99. Priest, Albert Edward Priest, died peacefully at Carleen Care Home, aged 95. Shergold, George Frank Shergold, died peacefully at home, aged 74. And Stubbington, Nigel James Stubbington, died on the 27th of August. Now we continue with Christian comment read by Maria. Thank you, Maria.
And Christian comment this week is written by Mary Gray, entitled It's Creation Time. September the 1st was the beginning of creation time, the invitation of the World Council of Churches and encouraged by Pope Francis. Creation time continues until October the 4th, the feast of St. Francis of Assisi, who died in 1226. St. Francis is a source of great inspiration for Pope Francis. St. Francis' Canticle of the Creatures, the first line of which, Laudato si, be praised, my Lord, is the title of his latest encyclical. Francis' love of the whole of creation, his lifestyle of poverty and simplicity, the story of his conversion from being a rich, fashionable knight to becoming a poor friar known as Il Poverello, the little poor man, and his infectious joy as he went along his way singing are all themes to inspire Creation Time in 2015. This is also the inspiration of the current campaign of the NGO, Green Christian, formerly Christian Ecology Link, called Joy in Enough. Joy in Enough is a challenge to Christians in Britain. It is also an invitation to all people of goodwill to join in building a just economy within the ecological limits of the earth. It calls on us not only to adopt a lifestyle of simplicity, like St. Francis, but to transform our economic model from one that insists on endless growth to one of steady state or even no growth. This new model is an invitation not only to transform our spending habits, patterns of travel, and to adopt imaginative policies of sustainability, but to live these out as spiritual practice. It means reading the signs of the times and making a critique of the prevailing model. How can it be right, for example, to depend on excessive consumerism, enticing young people to a doomed bandwagon of spend, 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 until they are locked in a cycle of debt? Joy in Enough is a call to reclaim a voice for people and planet in a new economic discourse. But is this not also the aim of our own Winchester Action for Climate Change? And surely the idea of creation time is simply to unite people of all faiths and no official faith in shared action for our common home, as Pope Francis put it, in his call for a global dialogue for creation. How wonderful it would be if churches and people in Hampshire at this time of harvest could celebrate the joy of our own harvest, where we have abundant rain, in a global context where so many communities have experienced severe drought or floods. Let's become aware that climate conditions are one of the causes that have forced people to leave their homes and set off on the perilous journey to a better life in European countries, and face the tragic consequences in some cases. Creation time is an invitation to play our part in a transformed future for the earth as home, where all can share in its abundance, to love the earth and go our way singing like St. Francis.
Thank you, Maria. And now we're going to move on to letters. So letters to the editor, and the first one's going to be read by Michael.
Council wastes cash on new minis, and this is the title of a letter from Valerie O'Leary, who lives in Rance's Way, Badger Farm. Sir, I was interested to read your article on the fleet of minis which the County Council has purchased as pool vehicles. This was mentioned in the Chronicle of September the 3rd. I myself was intrigued to see them, and on inspection found that they were all Mini Cooper D, a total of approximately 20 vehicles in all. Perhaps the County Council, would let the public know why it was necessary to spend all this money on status symbol cars. They would have been able to purchase cheaper cars such as Skoda or Seat. I feel this is once again an example of wasting public money and when other agencies are having to tighten their belts. Therefore, I think we would all like to hear from the Hampshire County Council an explanation as to why they bought such prestige cars, and what rubbish to say that the Mini is funky, so would appeal to young professionals. They're lucky to have a car to use. Valerie O'Leary.
And Richard Chisnell's letter is titled Best Ever Flowers. Sir, I am sure I am not alone in feeling that the floral displays and hanging baskets festooning our city centre this season are the best ever seen. Well done to all involved in making and keeping this impressive display so colourful, particularly the daily waterers. Might it now be an opportune moment to encourage more regular cleaning and maintenance of some of the less central areas, such as pavements and overhanging hedges, etc.? I believe automatic fines are imposed in some areas if householders allow their boundary vegetation to invade public spaces. We all have a duty to help our hard-pressed City Council and BID members to keep Winchester among the nicest places to visit. I remain a proud Wintonian. Richard Chesnell, St Cross, Winchester.
Great new trail. Sir, for over 25 years, I have lived close to the disused railway track that now forms the Meon Valley Trail, and I walk it regularly. Following the trail's recent renovation, I must commend those involved on the superb job they've done. The path has been transformed from a badly drained and muddy track into a wide, flat path which, even after the recent heavy rains, provides a good firm surface that's a pleasure to walk along. Overhanging vegetation has been cut back, and this allows sunlight, which means that the ground dries more quickly and wild flowers and plants will be encouraged to grow up on the embankments. Most important of all is that most people are using the trail. Recently I passed a family with young children all cycling along, A year ago, they just couldn't have done this. So congratulations to South Down Park Authority, Hampshire County Council Countryside Service, and the contractors who did the work. And that's from Michael Moody of High Street, Meanstoke.
This one comes from Robert Fielder in Chester Road, Winchester, and it's called Against a Wall. Sir, now here's a something. Your correspondent, Eric Horn, in his letter of August the 27th, has been reproved for daring to suggest that our city council would even think of using inappropriate materials for building a wall in the city. And who by? By none other than the deputy leader of the city council, the very same body of elected persons who are intent on perpetrating the second biggest inappropriation since Cromwell's visitation in the 17th century. The first, of course, was the Brooks Shopping Centre. Is there one conservation mandate for walls and another entirely different one for civic architecture in our city? And that's asked by Robert Fielder.
Sir, having had a pleasant breakfast at a local cafe, it was more than a little sad last week to observe two young men scrapping and squaring up to each other outside the King's Walk area, opposite the Lloyd's Pharmacy. Why one was barefoot seemed unclear. Perhaps it was an early dispute over about future sleeping arrangements. The pool of vomit between them seemed to be a perfect allegory of the Winchester deserves better theme. And all I can suggest is that since our council seems to have lost control of the city in a number of key regards, then our MP should adopt a stronger role in terms of securing appropriate stewardship, leadership and involvement. Condemned car parks belong elsewhere. Winchester doesn't need them. Stuart Keir, Courtney Road, Abbots Barton, Winchester.
Let's get nuclear. Sir, aghast that government will no longer drive up energy bills to fund various subsidies, renewables campaigners are on the march. But come on, folks. Schemes such as the Drax wood burners that depend on tearing up 5,000 square miles of American forests to collect subsidies while saving no carbon is just obscene. The pointless spar-shot digester is more of the same in miniature. These people should know by now that renewables are incapable of decarbonising the grid and cannot get beyond junior partner status. The demonising of nuclear power for two generations has left the electorate in disbelief that nuclear is overall less demanding of finite resources than any of the wind, solar or biomass solutions. Keeping the UK's lights on for a year would leave 30 tonnes of high-level nuclear waste to be stored for a few decades as it decays to a reusable resource, whereas 30 tonnes of steel is a fraction of a single wind turbine. Government has gotten itself into a box here. Every generator of electricity is demanding guarantees, thus undermining any idea of a free market and leaving us in a worse position than if we had nationalised industry. For Hinkley Point, French state-controlled EDF is demanding a price that's twice what it charges in France and the right to impose a flawed French design. The only obvious route out of this blackmail is to take nuclear sites back under state control and franchise out to their operation as we do with our railways. David Cameron will go to the UN climate conference in Paris with Amber Rudd's yet unpublished energy plan in hand. Early indications are of more wishful thinking. He knows that renewables cannot cut the mustard, but it's relatively toothless on delivering the nuclear power that does work. For an empty-handed UK and EU, the Paris conference looks set for more grandstanding nonsense. At least the conference lights will be kept on by relatively inexpensive and plentiful carbon-free electricity, courtesy of the French nuclear power. And that's from James Anderson of Wright's Close, South Wanston.
Thank you. That concludes the letters. Now we're going to take a walk back into history, a step back in time. Michael, a couple of hundred years to start.
200 years ago, September the 11th, 1815, and it headed Bill Swindler. Monday, a respectable bill broker in the city was charged at Bow Street office with obtaining a bill from a lady to get discounted for the amount of £200, for which he told her he had only been able to obtain £100, whereas she'd charged him with having obtained the whole of the amount and having applied £100 of the money to his own use. The prisoner declared his innocence and professed his readiness fully to explain his conduct, which he had no doubt would be satisfactory to the lady. News from the continent. Blazing hot summer. While this country has been blessed with one of the finest summers within memory, our continental neighbours have experienced quite the reverse. Some part of Germany having been desolated nearly by hailstorms and continual torrents of rain. In the Lower Elbe, under date of the 25th Alt, it is stated that this year is distinguished by an uncommonly wet summer, which is a very distressing circumstance for many countries. Nobody remembers such high waters at this season, and the floods must have swept away whole villages in Bohemia and Saxony, for the Elbe brings down with it dead cattle, bedsteads, cradles, doors, chests, beans, etc.
And there are two items from 100 years ago, September the 11th, 1915. King Alfred's service. The Welsh service at 5:30 on Sunday, held near King Alfred's statue, was very largely attended, it being the largest gathering yet seen at the service. The chaplain gave a short English address. Corporal O.J. Owen conducted the hymn, singing mostly Welsh, and Sergeant E.T. Owen rendered two excellent solos. The chaplain acknowledged the gift of lovely flowers and two potted ferns, presented to him at the service for the Welsh Army Camp Hospital by Mr. C. A. Hutchins, builder of 29 Highcliffe Road, and assured the citizens that these gifts were most highly appreciated. And the second item is titled Local Hero. Sergeant E. G. B. Mile, 2nd East Surrey Regiment, a nephew of Mr. F. W. Mile of Saxon Road, Winchester, has created a brilliant record for service in the field, and one that it would be difficult to beat. He was promoted from private to sergeant for bravery in the field, mentioned four times in dispatches, and awarded the Cross of the Russian Order of St. George, 4th class, within a period of 6 months. He went to the front with his regiment at the end of 1914 and has since seen a considerable amount of fighting.
50 years ago, September the 11th, 1965, new court opens. Romsey's imposing new magistrates' court in Church Street was officially opened at noon on Tuesday by the borough's Hyatt steward, the Earl of Mountbatten of Burma. Overnight, flowers had sprung into beds around the building, and a gathering of several dozen people on the post office side of the Church Street were present to see Lord Mountbatten greeted by a party who included the Mayor of Romsey, Alderman W.G. Waterman, the Chairman of the County Council, Sir Alan Lubbock, and the Chairman of the Probation Committee, Lieutenant Colonel Sir William Makins. And the second item is T.A. under threat. If the new government plan for the Territorial Army comes about, the 4th and 5th Battalion of the Royal Hampshire Regiment, with many others, will cease to exist. This was stressed by the Colonel of the Regiment, Major General R.H. Batten, C.B., C.B.E., D.S.O., at the 51st annual dinner of the past and present sergeants in Winchester on Saturday. The new plan is that such reserves as there are shall be reserves of the regular army if this goes through. Then the TA as we know it today will disappear.
And lastly, 25 years ago, on September the 7th, 1990, two articles. The first one headed M3 Twyford Down. A date for the High Court action on the M3 has been set for October the 10th. Meanwhile, donations have been pouring in from all over the country for the group fighting to oppose the Department of Transport's route. Mr. David Croker, leading campaigner against the published route, told Compton and Shawford parish councillors that standing orders to Twyford Down Association were over £22,000. The chairman of the M3 Joint Action Group said yesterday, "If we win, we don't have to pay costs, but we still want to see a lot more money. Even if we win, the department could appeal, and that would have an obvious financial implication." And the second item, Save Tigers plea. A strong plea for retaining this system of county regiments like the Royal Hampshire's was made by Brigadier Bob Long, Colonel of the Regiment, on Saturday. "The county regiment infantry system is the best way of organising the infantry of the British Army," declared the Colonel. He was speaking at the regiment's sergeant's annual dinner at Newburgh House, Winchester. The Mayor, Mrs. Pamela Pescott, commented, "Today the Army is a force for peace, and there has never been more evidence of that than at present in the Middle East crisis, where the very presence of a strong army stabilises an inflammatory situation." And that concludes the historical items. Now we move on to the Chronicle editorial comment, and that's going to be read by Michael.
The comment is, "We certainly do not envy civic leaders. Andy Marsh is right to warn that we risk sleepwalking into cuts to state services without understanding the consequences. The Chief Constable says what many public servants have been thinking: can we take another round? Efforts to balance the books in Westminster manifest themselves in Winchester through threats to overnight cover at the fire station, cuts to rural buses, and a fewer police on the streets. It has also had an effect on the City Council. This week's Chronicle has the latest on Silver Hill and a new leisure centre, two hugely expensive developments which civic leaders hope to navigate with an ever-shrinking pot of money. This newspaper does not envy them."
Thank you. Now we move on to First Person, and that's going to be read by Brian.
And First Person this week is George Hayter, who writes, "Pardon me for running like this. Perhaps I owe you an apology. If you've been alarmed by the sight of a smartly dressed, middle-aged man running through the streets of Winchester, it may have been me. Even if I am in a jacket and tie, I often break into a jog. I enjoy bursts of exercise. They release the tension in my inner spring. I'd never seen my athletic outbreaks as a reason for apology until I went for a walk round the neighbourhood with my wife the other evening. As usual, I persuaded her to join me in jogging for short bits, such as when passing a boring high wall or going alongside noxious traffic. Then I found myself running on my own. Once she'd caught up, I asked my wife why she'd slowed to a walk. To my amazement, she said it was because of the embarrassment caused by what I was wearing. We just passed another couple strolling the opposite direction, and she said they'd actually appeared slightly frightened by my running. 'You're wearing ordinary clothes,' my wife pointed out. 'Runners always wear running gear.' I didn't believe her at first. 'People don't bother dressing up these days,' I said. 'We've seen people wearing jeans to a wedding. There's no need for uniforms anymore. Bowler hats went out years ago.' 'Yes,' she said, 'but running's different. You don't realise.' I had to admit that the couple had stood aside, and the gentleman even called out as I passed, 'All right.' Perhaps my everyday garb had put the wind up them. Yes, now I can see it. My fellow citizens had seen me not as a healthy resident keeping fit, but someone in terrible trouble, perhaps chasing a thief or even being pursued by the police. This was bad news for me. By jogging for a couple of minutes, I had black shoes, trousers and a shirt. I was frightening people. Pity. My lifestyle and health regime rely on being able to get up from my desk and sprint on a whim. No time to put on running shoes, no tiresome change of clothing down to tiny little socks that fit into running shoes, and certainly no getting out of the car and driving to a recreation ground or journeying to an expensive urban gym full of running machines. If I had to do all that first, I'd never run an inch. Sartorial reconfiguration can be a barrier to activity. The idea that you have to change clothes before stretching your limbs is often ingrained by PE lessons at school. Of course, it's a good idea not to stink of sweat if you're meeting people, so moderate activity is often best, and our fresh British climate helps us to smell sweet most of the time. Using your imagination and maybe some dance music, you can flex your muscles while doing it, from making the bed to putting the dishes away, cleaning the car or watering the roses. But my greatest aid to staying supple is stairs. I never take the lift. The stairs in my home are as good as a doctor. They're also my gym machine, my punch bag and my hamster's wheel all rolled into one. A good time to exercise is when you're in a hurry. Then you have to an excuse to stretch out, and you kill two birds with one stone. You get fit, and you arrive at your destination on time. I'll carry on running little bits around the neighbourhood, but now I will compromise. I'll slow down to a walk when someone comes the other way, and to reassure them I'm not a criminal on the run, I wish them a good afternoon. If you happen to be a person coming the other way, perhaps you'll be inspired to run a few yards. Don't bother walking home to change your clothes first. George Hayter.
Thank you. Now, a couple of items from Belgarum, the alternative look at the news. Plans to create footpaths. A society has been formed to campaign for footpaths connecting villages north and east of Winchester. Dubbed the Watercress Way, the route would open up old railway lines between Winchester and Newbury and Winchester and Alresford. The new group will promote a vision for paths which could link Wanston, Alresford and the Itchen Valley to a huge network through Winchester and the South Downs Way. County Councillor Jackie Porter told a meeting in Martyr Worthy on Monday that the lines may deviate from the railways to accommodate subsequent development and land issues. Malcolm Prince, founder of Worthy Runners, outlined three new walks which could be created. From South Wanston to Kingsworthy via the historic Worthy Down Halt, down the River Itchen from Kingsworthy, and a 9-mile route between Itchen Abbas and Alresford. It's all there just on our doorstep, he said. We must use it, and that's the plan to future success. The Watercress Line and the Itchen opening up parts of that will be the catalyst to really make these walks happen and bring the life we want and the area's matters going forward. Worthy conservationists have been looking after a section of the line near Kingsworthy, and a new path was recently opened at Itchen Abbas. The new group hopes to become a charity to apply for grants. It will also advertise the routes in local literature, but it still requires a secretary to advertise meetings via email and take minutes. Anyone interested is asked to contact Councillor Jackie Porter. And the second item under Belgarum, heritage doors to open, and this is something for this weekend. Doors normally closed to the public will swing open in Winchester this weekend. The annual heritage open days between September the 10th and 13th will see several places open free of charge. Excuse me. Taking part is the Chesil Theatre, formerly the Church of St Peter. Chesil was first mentioned in the Winton Doomsday Records dated 1148. St John's House on the Broadway is one of the oldest buildings in the city, dating from the 13th century. Musicians Paganini and Liszt once played in its Regency Ballroom. The Quaker Meeting House on Colebrook Street dates from 1774. There will be an exhibition of drawings and sketches by Andrew Rutter, retired Winchester Conservation Officer, made in and around Winchester. Members of the City of Winchester Trust are invited by Hampshire Cultural Trust to a behind-the-scenes tour of its collections at Chilcombe House, Chilcombe Lane, Bar End. And now we move on to this week's announcements, and we'll start with What's On. And on Thursday the 24th of September, between 10 a.m. and 6 p.m, there's an eye contact exhibition at at the Aegeus Bowl, Southampton, where there will be trained guides available to help with information about the exhibits and sales. If you want more information on that relevant to site, then it's 02380 646 377. That's 02380 646 377. On Friday the 18th of September, at 7:30 in the evening, there's a concert by the Bournemouth Symphony Orchestra in Romsey Abbey. For more information on that concert, that's on Friday the 18th of September at 7:30, telephone 01794 512987. That's 01794 512987. On Saturday the 14th of November, this is our advance notice, tickets have just gone on sale now for The Dream of Gerontius. It's by the Southampton Choral Society. It's being performed in Winchester Cathedral. That's on Saturday the 14th of November. Tickets are on sale now, 01962 857 275. That's 857 275. And finally, on Tuesday the 22nd of September, there's a lunchtime concert in Winchester Cathedral at 1 p.m. And that features a performance by flautist Jane Gilbert. Lighting up time, lighting up time ends on Friday the 11th of September at 6:33 a.m. and begins at 7:29 p.m. On Wednesday the 16th of September, it ends at 6:41 a.m. and begins at 7:18 p.m. And if you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please telephone Irene Dowding on 01962 870 370. That's 01962 870 370. Now we're going to continue with further items of general news. Michael.
This piece is referred to in the editorial comment, and it's referring to the cuts that are possible in our expenditure. Hampshire Chief Constable has delivered a stark warning over impending cuts that could see officer numbers slashed to a dangerous level. In an unprecedented step for a Chief Constable, Andy Marsh has spoken amid fears that people will sleepwalk into another round of multi-million pound cutbacks that will mean the axe for vital services. In 2 months, Hampshire Constabulary will learn from the Home Office how much needs to be shaved. Having been warned, it could be up to 40% or £65 million. That is on top of £80 million already saved since 2010, and which has seen 1,500 jobs lost, stations shut and buildings sold. It will mean that by 2020, more than half of the workforce could be gone. If the worst happens to Hampshire Police, one of the largest forces in England and Wales, and yet the sixth cheapest, Mr. Marsh says there will be no choice but to lose frontline officers. Now Mr. Marsh is urging the people of Hampshire to have their say before the axe falls. He said, the Home Office has asked us to prepare for savings in the region of 25 to 40%. In crude terms, that's another £40 million to £65 million. And that is between 800 and 100, no, 1,200 police officers. I'm not saying that all of those posts will go, but that helps people understand how much money we are talking about. Since 2010, we have taken £80 million worth of cuts, and that's 1,500 posts lost. We have to implement change at a faster and more aggressive pace than many other forces.
Shock as blaze guts house. Neighbours in a Winchester community have spoken of their shock after a fire destroyed a house. More than 40 firefighters from across the county were sent to Badger Farm to tackle the blaze. The property in the end terrace house at Harrow Down was completely destroyed, but firefighters managed to stop it from spreading to the other houses in the street. Neighbours in the property next door were evacuated, along with other residents in the street, as firefighters cordoned off the scene. No one was injured in the incident. Residents quickly alerted the fire service after seeing the fire unfold. A couple who asked not to be named said, "We were in at the time, and the next door neighbour's partner came rushing at the door saying there is a fire, and when we looked out there were flames and smoke gushing from the upstairs bedroom. It was absolutely frightening." Crews from St Mary's, Eastleigh, Romsey, Winchester and Alresford and a command team from Portchester all attended the scene. Firefighter Russ Timms was part of the team that came in later that evening to relieve the first team. He said, "Initially the crews turned up and the fire was really strong. They did prevent it from spreading to the next house along. They managed to keep it to just the one building." Watch manager Mark Compton said, "When the initial crew turned up, it was a well-developed fire. The windows had failed and the fire was coming out. Without their prompt action, it would have spread." Another neighbour described the incident. He said, "We were sitting in the garden relaxing and I heard shouting and a neighbour saying there was a fire. We heard small explosions and saw there was fire coming out of the windows of the house. I was concerned because I did not know what was happening and I know the family well and we were all worried. It is quite a close neighbourhood." Heather Ellis, who lives in Harrow Close, said that the community have rallied to help the family affected. She said, "We're in shock. I do not think the seriousness of it has hit us just yet, and the implications it is going to have for them. I'm just glad there is no loss of life and nobody was hurt." The family, whose home was destroyed in the blaze, asked not to be approached by the media and declined to comment. At the time of the fire, they were not at home. The blaze happened on Sunday at 4:55 p.m. The stop call was at 6:07 p.m. Initially, firefighters thought the fire might have been arson, but investigators now believe a laptop and phone charger were left on a bed to overheat. And there is a photograph of the gutted house at Harrow Down. And it's a scene of pure devastation.
Devastating blow if Opera leaves town. Civic chiefs and businesses have reacted with dismay to news that the Grange Park Opera could leave Alresford. The opera company is considering an offer to move to Surrey after more than 15 years at Northington Grange, as reported in the Chronicle last week. The eight-week season gives a huge boost to the local economy every summer, as hundreds of people stay in the town or use local shops, pubs and restaurants. Lisa Griffiths, chairman of Alresford Town Council, said it's a shame. There are a lot of people with bed and breakfasts and people who volunteer as well. It's become part of Alresford life. It's wonderful for Alresford. People come for the opera and then come back and visit the town. Mrs. Griffiths said she thought there was a moral obligation for the opera to stay, as many local people had fundraised to build the 550-seat auditorium. "I think morally it's quite wrong after such a short period of time for GPO to say, 'Thanks, we're off.' There should be some thought for people who have helped make it a success," she said. Andy Ayres, manager of the Swan Hotel on West Street, said, "It'd be devastating for the town of Russ and for us if it left. We take a lot of business from the opera. We have a lot of singers staying with us. We're busy all the time. It's nice to have people in tuxedos all dressed up for the opera, but we still have the Watercress line for tourism here." Mr. Ayres added, "We're going to lose some business if it goes, but I'm sure we'll be able to fill the hotel with other customers." Luke Bennett, assistant manager of the Purifoy Arms at Preston Candover, said, Any business trade that gets removed from Alresford would be an issue. I think it's a blow to the local economy. Simon Evans, chairman of the Town Chamber of Commerce, said local businesses would be interested in talking to GPO to see how they could support them. GPO are currently in negotiation with the Baring family, who own the listed building. The lease expires in 2016, and the company's been offered a rolling 10-year lease. GPO is reported to be tempted by the offer of a 40-year lease and a longer summer season at the West Horsley Place, home of the former TV presenter Bamba Gascoigne, aged 80. The company has developed the annual season into a nationally known event to rival similar events such as Glyndebourne. This summer saw Bryn Terfel perform in Fiddler on the Roof. Mark Baring, son of Lord Ashburton, said he hoped to be able to reach an agreement with Grange Park. Mr. Baring denied that GPO had been asked to stump up £1 million for a new lease. He said he was open to discussions about extending the season, something that would be welcomed by local traders. Mr. Baring said the family would be keen to attract another opera company to the unique venue should the GPO depart. He told the Chronicle, "We're very committed to continuing the opera festival. We think it's been a great thing. The house dates back to the 17th century, but was adapted as an early 19th century with a classical portico of Doric columns. And there's a very inspiring sort of picture of Grange Park Opera at Northington Grange with flood lighting and the columns in front. It looks quite good."
This piece is headed "Drab and Dirty Shopping Structure to Get Revamped." A widely hated concrete block in Winchester city centre is set for a £160,000 revamp under pressure from local business. The City Council is pressing ahead with changes to the Casson block, St George's Street, a brutalist structure long thought to be deterring customers from the area. It comes after years of campaigning from tenants, some of whom are considering leaving if its appearance is not improved. The area is home to Winchester District Citizens Advice Bureau, an NHS clinic, the new Bieber's hairdressers, and various eateries and shops. Its stark frontages were the height of fashion when built in 1963, from designs by the highly respected Sir Hugh Casson. But architectural trends have since moved on. The north side of St George's Street was described by the Buildings of England Guide in 2010 as rather bleak colonnade of shops and offices. The block and nearby alleyway through to Upper Brook Street are also known spots for antisocial behaviour, petty crime and drug use. Local businesses, led by Tom Romito of Tom's Deli, have campaigned for the refurbishment for years, telling councillors the block's drab, dirty appearance and lack of space for outdoor seating are a turn-off for customers. Councillors have also been concerns have also been raised about its cobbled frontage, an eyesore used as a parking space by delivery vans. Kate Cloud, the council's head of economy and arts, said in a briefing paper to the cabinet this week, "The resident businesses feel they have waited for a long time for improvements to take place, and some say they're seriously considering their future as tenants of the area. The improvements are intended to encourage a more welcoming atmosphere, greater appeal to customers, and effect general enhancements to the cityscape," she said. This summer, four representatives met civic chiefs, including Councillor James Byrne, portfolio holder for local economy, to gather momentum for the changes. The City Council was yesterday set to approve a £160,000 budget for designs and consultation.
Fate sets near record. Its organisers claim to run the best village show in Hampshire, and with near record numbers on a cold day like Saturday, you wouldn't bet against the Littleton and Hairstock show. Around 2 2,500 people flocked to the recreation ground near Winchester to see old friends and experience the quintessential English fete. Soundtracked by the ATR military band, families enjoyed ferret racing, archery, a climbing war, and the talents of a sculptor who crafted a wooden owl from a chainsaw. The WI made their teas, and children played their football, but also making their debut this year were the Crawley Modellers, a youth project run by Patrick Hendra. Angus French, 15, entered the fold to help him craft a model boat. From there, Angus has designed award-winning models, appeared on national television, and found his dream career. Showing off his drone on Saturday, Angus of Main Road, Littleton, said, "That's where it all started, really, because there's a youth club in Crawley, and Patrick did a summer school where lots of kids from the village would build their own models. If it wasn't for that, I wouldn't have done any of it. It set me up for a career almost, because it's something different to what other people are doing." Saturday's main event followed a pet show on Thursday, where around 200 people showed off their dogs, cats, guinea pigs, and in one case, an African millipede. Committee Chairman Alan Brooks said, "Last year was a record attendance, and we're looking to be about the same this year. The sort of thing that we're here for is, first of all, for everybody to have fun. Second, to meet each other again, because a lot of us only see each other once a year. And lastly, to raise money for charity. This year's beneficiaries are family support charity Homestart and the Kevin Lay Foundation, founded after the death of the local church warden who died in an air crash in Kosovo in 1999. The foundation raises money for local children to travel on international aid missions, of the sort Mr. Lay was on when he travelled. The total raised was yet to be counted as the scouts held their race night in the marquee on Saturday. And there's a group of photographs from the fete, which looks very exciting. There are two of the dog Gymkhana, where they're at the owners have their dogs on leads and they're encouraging them to jump over small jumps. There's the ATR military band and a couple of photos of people who are attending, one of Adrian Davidson and his son Sam, who look absolutely delighted to be there.
City's pub reclaims national award. A Winchester pub is back on the award circuit after 2 years of disappointment. The Wickham Arms in Kingsgate Street has reclaimed its crown of Town Pub of the Year in the Good Pub Guide. It won the title in 2012, but lost out to the Old Harkers in Chester and the Park in Bedford in the last 2 years. Landlord John Howard, who has run the 18th century pub for 6 years, has dedicated the win to his 35-strong staff. "It's absolutely brilliant. It's a fantastic award," he said. "We won it in 2012 for 2013, and it was massive for business. Great for the staff and great for the team, and a great bit of payback for them, for all their hard work. It made us incredibly busy as well. We didn't change anything about how we operated our business. We try to be the best pub we can." The Fuller's-owned firm has its roots in 1755 as a coaching inn. It later neighboured Winchester's Red Light District before evolving into a hotel and pub which serve the city's growing foodie culture. "It's probably the most traditional pub you'll ever step foot in," Mr. Howard said. "You get the feeling when you walk over the threshold, it's quite museum-like, but the welcome is warm." Asked whether he was worried by the rapid pub closures around the UK, he added, "Around here, I wouldn't say it's a protective bubble, but it's as good as that here in Winchester." And there's a picture of Mr. Howard, the manager, with all his team, all smiling and holding the award. Good luck to them. Been there a lot.
Yes. Restaurant's anniversary is being marked in a special way. A Winchester restaurant owned by a celebrity chef is celebrating its first birthday this month. River Cottage Canteen is hosting a party with live music on September the 24th to mark a year since it was opened by Hugh Fernley Whittingstall. Jill Mellor, the chain's head chef, will oversee a four-course meal, a welcome drink, with the FB Pocket Orchestra playing jazz, blues, ragtime and other popular dances of the 1920s and 30s. Tickets cost £35 per person. Guests are asked to arrive at 7 p.m. with food served at 7:30. To book, all you have to do is call 01962 and the number is 457747 or visit rivercottage.net/Winchester.
Now, this show will be the ideal death of you. Summer went out on a cheery note last weekend as funeral directors descended on Winchester to discover everything that's great about death. From coffins and cake to mummy wrapping lessons and a bucket kicking store, the Ideal Death Show had it all. Delegates came from across the funeral world for lectures on new ways to remember, how it feels to die and where the industry is going. On Saturday, there was a free exhibition in St John's House where residents could plan their ceremonies, talk with counsellors, or mark a loved one's passing by sponsoring a bat box. Sarah Preston of Final Fare Taxi Hearses attended the show for the first time. She said, "I was just talking to a lady who said people don't like to talk about it, so the public don't know what's out there. Then they have to arrange a funeral and they just do it in the traditional way because they don't know anything else." Colleague Rory Coxhill added, "It's really well attended. I didn't think it would be as busy as this, to be honest. I've never done anything like this before." Across the road in the Abbey Gardens, the people of Winchester discussed their own mortality over tea with priests. The show uses tongue-in-cheek humour to help engage people with what is often a taboo subject. Saturday's proceedings were topped off by a Good Funeral Awards, where prizes included Grave Digger of the Year, Crematorium Attendant of the Year, and the Blossom D'Amour Award for Funeral Forestry. Winners received a trophy of Anubis, the Egyptian god of death.
Wildlife Trust's chide DEFRA for badger cull extension. The Wildlife Trusts have condemned DEFRA's announcement that pilot badger culls are edging closer to Hampshire. The actions in Somerset and Gloucestershire will continue, and that culling will be extended to a new area in Dorset. The Trusts argue that the two-year pilot, the badger cull, had been found repeatedly flawed in its methodology, its measures and its objectives, and that a programme of vaccination and protection and control measures would be safer for wildlife, cattle and farmers' livelihoods. The Wildlife Trusts are calling on the government to implement better biosecurity on farms, stricter cattle movement controls, funding of integrated and targeted badger vaccination programmes, improved TB testing in cattle and develop a cattle vaccine. Debbie Tan, Chief Executive of Hampshire and Isle of Wight Wildlife Trust, said, "All the evidence suggests that culling badgers is both cruel and ineffective in tackling bovine TB. We're very concerned that the cull is being extended to Dorset. Here in Hampshire, we've been vaccinating badgers to prevent the spread of bovine TB from affected areas. Since then, there's currently no evidence of badgers carrying the disease here. We can get ahead of the disease by vaccinating properly. Thanks to the generosity of our members, the Trust recently began a program of badger vaccination focused on areas that have the highest potential risk. This, together with proper cattle management, measures such as strict biosecurity, regular TB testing and movement controls, is all part of what we see as common sense and effective measures to protect both cattle and wildlife." Stephen Trotter, director for the Wildlife Trusts in England, said, "We're on the side of farmers in the battle against bovine TB. This is an awful disease and I understand the emotional and financial pain it causes, I have huge sympathy for those farmers and their families whose businesses and lives have been brutally affected. But this is the wrong way of tackling bovine TB, and we strongly disagree with this decision. Mr. Trotter added, the government's decisions to go against the scientific evidence and expert advice, and they disregard the weight of public opinion, which is against the culling of badgers. The published reviews of the pilot culls have shown them to be ineffective and inhumane. Sadly, many people will today be infuriated, exasperated and angry about what is happening. The cost of the culls has been eye-watering. The government must explain why it sees this cost as this cost-effective use of taxpayers' money, especially when there are less expensive and more effective measures available to them, like vaccinations.
Design vision for city station area set to be approved by councillors. A design brief for architects competing to redevelop Winchester station area is set to be agreed next week. Winchester City Council is launching a design competition as the next step in the multi-million pound station approach scheme, rebuilding a key gateway to the city with offices, parking, transport infrastructure, housing and retail. The huge site stretches from Sussex Street to the Andover Road Railway Bridge. A brief instructing architects is set to be approved at a special cabinet meeting next Thursday, September the 17th. The paper and meeting agenda were due to be published on the City Council website by 5 p.m. yesterday after the Chronicle went to press. The last draft to be made public called for a welcoming arrival gateway with modern offices, efficient parking, flats and houses, improved access and vibrant public space centred around pedestrians. Architects were also asked to consider the potential for a new cultural venue amid calls for a concert hall to be included. Kevin Warren, the council's head of estates, has been tasked with inviting firms to submit designs and assembling a jury to judge them. The panel, including councillors, architects and civil officers, will recommend a winner after public consultation. Councillors have been told at meetings this year that the brief should insist on key elements without stifling architects' creativity. Meanwhile, some industry figures have warned that rushing the process could leave the area devoid of character. Chris Higgins, former head of estates at Winchester University, a member of City of Winchester Trust, told councillors in July that bowing to commercial factors could leave the area looking like a Croydon office block. He told the Chronicle, "We don't want the station area to end up like Croydon or Reading or any other anonymous suburb where the commercial factors have lost the integrity of what is best for our heritage. But, of course, it must be financially viable, and there are enlightened ways to make this possible." Snug Architects, the only firm to have publicly announced its interest, wants to turn the station junction into a roundabout and create the cattle market under an ambitious plan developed by students. The public meeting takes place in Winchester Guildhall at 6 p.m. on September the 17th.
Top DJ plays set in boy's memory. A world-famous DJ swapped Ibiza for Otterbourne on Saturday to deliver an intimate set in memory of a Hampshire boy killed in a road accident. Trevor Nelson brought his soul to the sold-out Bradfest, a one-day festival raising £12,000 for cancer charities through Bradley's Foundation. The third annual event at Woodlands Park raised money for causes, including a teenage cancer trust appeal, supporting a new 10-bed cancer ward for young people at Southampton General Hospital. BBC DJ Nilsson topped a bill which also included Southampton songstress Charlie McCauley, pop singer Danielle May, and indie rockers The Novatones, fresh from sets at Common People and Blissfields this summer. They performed to a crowd of 500, with good weather ensuring better tickets than 2014. Bradley's Foundation was founded in 2012, in memory of Bradley Watson, who died in a car accident in 2000, just days after his 9th birthday. His mother, Tina Dine, said, "It was an exceptional day. In total, we raised £12,000, so that was fantastic. All the organisers were absolutely delighted with the local support from the local community and local companies that sponsored us. A lot of people went to a lot of effort. A lot of people volunteered and gave services and products and time for nothing. So it was a huge success." And there are three photographs with this article. One of groups of friends enjoying the atmosphere, one of Danielle May on stage, and one of the DJ, Trevor Nilsson, with Elliot Watson, who's the brother of Bradley, and Tom Richards.
Green gas plan under spotlight. Spartok College is preparing for public drop-in sessions to inform local residents about their proposed green gas mill. The college last week announced its partnership with energy firm Ecotricity to build a new green gas mill. The first public consultation event will be on Thursday, September 24th, from 3 to 8pm at the college. The mill is part of its plan to develop a centre of excellence for renewable energies. It will turn grass into gas using anaerobic digestion to supply both the college and the national gas grid through a new gas connection. The mill will be fed with cut grass from surrounding farmland, and the feedstock will be sourced within maximum radius of 15 miles from the college. The feedstock will be transported directly to the site from the B3049 up Westley Lane to the college farm, avoiding Sparsholt Village. The cut grass will be transported by standard agricultural vehicles such as tractors with large trailers rather than lorries, so the college says disruption will be negligible. Tim Jackson, college principal, said he hoped the upcoming public consultation would help residents better understand the project. Mr. Jackson said, "We think it's important to correct any unhelpful speculation about the size and scale of the plant and to give a clear outline of how the feedstock will be transported. We won't be using thousands of lorries, as reported in the press. The feedstock will be transported by tractor and trailer, which are a familiar sight in this rural community, carting material from the same fields we will be using. These deliveries will mainly substitute existing vehicle movements derived from farming the local agricultural landscape rather than create additional movements." Mr. Jackson added, "This is a brilliant project that produces carbon-neutral gas from grass. There are many benefits for the college, including the provision of education and training for young people looking for a career in renewable energy professions, a significantly reduced carbon footprint for the college, reducing college operating costs, and providing lots of hands-on work experience for our students, as we do all of our farm-based practical units. However, there are also wider benefits to the local community. Local farmers will benefit by providing grass to run the mill, while process supports food production and the environment by providing a natural fertilizer that reduces the need for artificial chemicals, and by growing the grass in rotation with crops, the soil is further improved through rest. The green gas mill will employ a number of people directly to the plant and through the delivery of feedstock."
This piece has rather a strange title. It's called "School Unveils Their New Head." Perrins School in Alsford has started the new school year with a new head teacher. Steve Jones has joined the secondary school from Christ the King College on the Isle of Wight, where he was vice-principal. Mr. Jones said, I will ensure that every single young person within my care will be safe, happy, and will succeed, regardless of ability. He added, I'm determined to work with every member of the parents' community, including students, parents, staff, and governors, to ensure that every student will gain the best education that we can possibly offer. Sue Pakenham Walsh, chairman of governors, said, We are sure that Mr. Jones will be a dynamic and inspirational leader for parents, who will ensure every student enjoys the very best education we can provide. There are other developments underway at Perrins. The main hall extension and refurbishment is currently underway and expected to be completed by November. School business manager Clive Surrey said, The extension will allow us to provide better facilities inside and outside to raise the school standards.
Hospice reopens after high-tech revamp. It is the multi-million pound revamp that will breathe new life into Hampshire's Children's Hospice. Naomi House in Sutton Scotney has been refurbished in a £4 million scheme, which closed the hospice for 19 months. During this time, nurses and carers continued their vital service from temporary spaces created within Jack's Place, the next-door hospice for young adults. Alistair Stewart, the appeal patron, cut the ribbon on the new hospice and welcomed staff, families, supporters and the local media for an exclusive look around the new state-of-the-art facility. Around 100 supporters of the hospice's Caterpillar appeal, which raised the money, were in attendance and given an exclusive first look at the state-of-the-art hospice building. The hospice is staging a fete and open day this Saturday for the public. A park and ride bus service runs from the Forest Edge Kart Club in Barton Stacey, and there's a photograph of a very young boy, Michael Strachan, who's cutting the ribbon with help from Alistair Stewart and a group of people standing around them and looking on.
Week-long for this festival has activities for everyone. Villagers in Kingsworthy are preparing to celebrate a popular festival. Worthy's Festival, which is now in its third year, will run from September the 19th to the 27th and will see 9 days of events. More than 5,000 people are expected to turn out for the events, which run every 2 years. New additions include a fruit, flower and produce stall, school for budding gardeners. Bakers and jam makers will also be included, with special classes for youngsters. Jane Rutter, chairman of Worthy Festival Steering Group, said it's going to be a hugely exciting and great fun. And the wonderful thing about the festival is that the whole community gets behind it. Throughout the festival, vintage buses provided by King Alfred's Buses will be running a free service to and from Church Green around the village. Some of the activities and events including a football festival, a music festival featuring 19 local bands, a beer festival, food festival, a dog show, an arts and crafts fair, and even a Worthy's Got Talent competition. Various groups will also be getting in on the action and showcasing their work, including Worthy Local History Group, which will hold a guided walk on September the 20th from 2 p.m. The festival will kick off in style, as the WI group, who are celebrating their centenary year, will hold a coffee morning at the Church Hall in Fraser Road at 10:30 a.m. The day will continue with a family fun day on September the 19th, which will run from 2 p.m. to 6 p.m. and will feature a variety of fun-filled activities for children, including a teacup ride, a children's trail and traditional games. Find out more about the activities and dates, visit worthysfestival.com.
The Mayor of Winchester is opening her official residence for a series of historical talks to raise money for her charities. The Abbey House events will explore the city and its cathedral's medieval pasts to benefit three children's hospices, the Countess Mountbatten, Rowan's Hospice and Naomi House and Jack's Place. They begin on September the 23rd with Dr. Katie Tucker from Winchester University exploring the search for the remains of King Alfred in Hyde. And on October the 14th, Anna Withers, chairman of Winchester Cathedral Voluntary Guides, will host a talk entitled Just Williams, a history of Williams as involved in the cathedral's history. Then, on November the 25th, residents can learn about Anglo-Saxon and Danish kings in a talk from Barbara York, the university's emeritus professor in early medieval history. All talks are at 10:30 for 11 a.m. and cost £8. Tickets from Winchester TIC in the Broadway.
Archaeological dig calls for Silver Hill. City councillors fighting the Silver Hill scheme have warned that nationally significant relics could be destroyed if archaeological studies are left to the project's developer. Councillor Kim Gottlieb has threatened further legal action against Winchester City Council if it allows excavation to begin without an independent report into what lies beneath the site. Extensive Roman and medieval archaeology is thought to be buried under the five-acre plot, due to be developed as shops, flats and parking in the city centre. Civic chiefs say detailed requirements were set out during the planning process and developer, TH Real Estate's, investigations will be overseen by Historic England. The council may also hire short-term staff to cope with the extra workload. Councillor Jan Warwick, joining criticism from fellow Conservative councillors Rose Burns and Councillor Gottlieb, called for an independent report at council in July. In a joint statement on Tuesday, the three said, "At the moment, we are talking about unknown mitigation measures for unknown archaeology. Whatever planning policy might say, relying on the developer is naive and unrealistic from the perspective of preserving important archaeology. The council should be primarily concerned about what's in the national interest rather in the interest of the developer." Councillor Gottlieb added, "Instead of carefully managing the process itself, the council has delegated that responsibility to a developer that doesn't have the ability, let alone the incentive, to change the scheme." City officers have recommended Councillor Warwick's motion to be rejected. Cabinet was due to determine the matter as the Chronicle went to press yesterday, with the issue returning on October the 21st. Visit hampshirechronicle.co.uk to find out how the Cabinet voted. And there's a photograph of Councillor Rose Burns with this article.
Extension likely. A £240,000 extension to Winchester's only major cemetery was set to be approved by civic chiefs as the Chronicle went to press on Wednesday. Magdalen Hill Cemetery has not been added to since 1932. The Chronicle has previously reported warnings that the city is running out of graves. The project added 5,000 new plots to extend Magdalen Hill's life by up to 40 years, already has planning permission, but will cost more than expected. Cabinet is set to add £85,000 to the budget at its meeting on Wednesday, more than double the extra thought to be needed before the scheme was tendered. This would bring the budget to £240,000.
Earn stripes at Zany Zebras. Summer may be over, but the charge is on to make the next one the wildest yet for Hampshire. The county is set to host an invasion of dazzling zebras next July, and with business quick off the mark to take part, the public art extravaganza looks set to exceed expectations. Marwell Zoo, near Colden Common, is celebrating the signing of its 25th sponsor for their Zany Zebras event, an impressive milestone considering there are still 10 months to go before the stampede hits Hampshire's streets and parks. The latest company to join is Manor Farm Country Park near Burselton, and Marwell bosses hope many more will follow. Hope will follow their lead to attract thousands to the county for the 10-week trail. With so many businesses signing up so quickly, hopes are high that Zany Zebras will be bigger and better than the Zoo's Go Rhinos exhibition, which was held in 2013. That trail saw 36 life-sized rhino sculptures decorated by local artists set up home throughout Southampton for 10 weeks, boosting visitors' numbers to the region. The auction of the sculptures also raised nearly £125,000 for three different charities. Kirsty Matheson, project manager of Zany Zebras, said, "We are really excited to have secured 25 sponsors already. The fact that so many companies have signed up, are returning sponsors from Go Rhinos, is testament to the huge impact the project had on those businesses. In addition, we had a fantastic response from other businesses and organisations who missed out on the fun of 2013. Sponsorship works for all shapes and sizes, from small family-run businesses like Pickwell Farm to international brands such as Southampton Football Club, Cunard and P&O Cruises. It's not too late to sign up."
Riders turn out for fun equestrian Families Day. The recent South Downs Bloodhounds Horse and Dog Show attracted over 100 local riders of all ages, plus their families and friends, who enjoy classes for show jumping, dressage and horse showing, plus fun classes including fancy dress and gymkhana for younger riders. The Bloodhounds are kennelled near Petersfield and have become a popular addition to local equestrian sport. Up to 24 hounds use their keen sense of smell to follow the natural scent of a group of runners as they run across country. Mounted followers, in excess of 100 at some meets, follow the hounds on horseback, jumping fences and natural obstacles to keep up. Their season has just started, and the Bloodhounds will be meeting at farms between Petersfield and Winchester each Sunday throughout the winter.
Rare view of the railway. The Watercress Line is holding an open weekend next weekend. It will give the public chances to look behind the scenes on September the 19th and 20th in the steam railway from Alsford to Alton. At Medstead Station, the wagon department will provide tours of the work in progress. Visitors can also view restoration projects in the yard at Ropley. There is free entry for members of the Midhance Railway Preservation Society and shareholders of the Midhance Railway Limited.
Strategy to beat cyber criminals. The Police and Crime Commissioner, Simon Hayes, will host a cyber crime meeting for business bosses. Mr. Hayes will be jointly hosting the meeting at Hampshire's Constabulary Training Headquarters in Netley on Tuesday, September the 15th. The event, which is being run with Hampshire Constabulary and the Federation of Small Business, aims to help firms improve their cyber security, recognise threats to their businesses and clients, and make sense of the jargon. Mr. Hayes said, "The frequency and severity of cyber attacks are escalating as criminals increasingly exploit the anonymity and speed of the internet. The fact that 90% of large businesses and 74% of small and medium-sized businesses have reported that they have suffered an information security breach demonstrates that every organisation needs to consider how they defend themselves against the cyber threats they face. The meeting is part of a wider strategy that aims to raise awareness of business crime and its effects, and to propose ways to reduce the problems through practical measures and partnership working. Delegates attending the event will hear from two keynote speakers, covering different aspects of cybercrime. One is Katie Harvey, IT Security Officer at Airbus Defence and Space, and Steve Proffitt, Deputy Head and Performance Manager at Action Fraud.
A new chapter begins. It's all change at a Winchester private school. St Swithin's Junior School at Arsford Road welcomed pupils to its new multi-million pound building, which has opened its doors for the first time this week. The new C-shaped building features a large glass entrance leading to a two-storey atrium with an inner courtyard, including a free-flow play area for the younger years, individual work pods and specialist teaching rooms. Many of the classrooms have floor-to-ceiling windows to take advantage of the views over the South Downs National Park and make the most of natural light. The new school replaces the existing school buildings and, among many other things, enables the junior school to have smaller size classes. The development includes specialist teaching rooms, a science laboratory, an art studio, and a media computing room. The work isn't finished yet, as a new performing arts space and gym is set to open in Easter 2016. In the meantime, pupils will use the existing hall and gym. The total cost of the project is £10 million, and it will ensure the school, which is next to St Swithin's Senior School, can grow its intake of pupils from 190 to as many as 260. St Swithin's headmistress, Pim Grimes, said, "The new school is a wonderful building to work and learn in. We have spent the summer preparing and are delighted to have such a wonderful facility for the children. The light floods into the building, bringing the outside in." And there's a photograph of part of the atrium, I think it is, with lots of glass. You can see the light flooding in and children walking through the space.
Thank you, and that concludes the extracts for this week. So thank you to our editors, Linda Vincent and Margaret Boyden, and thanks, of course, to our copying, dispatch and memory stick preparation teams. And, of course, thanks to our readers, Michael Wyard.
Goodbye.
Maria Head.
Goodbye.
And Brian Woodruff.
Goodbye.
And from me, Keith Vincent, goodbye, and do have an enjoyable week. When you finish with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet and return it as soon as possible, placing the address label inside the wallet. Thank you.